Hello and welcome to Differential Discussions. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Dave.
And today we're back to talk about mentorship, and we have back with us Vicky Cunningham. Vicky, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's fun to be here.
So, Dave and I wanted to have a talk about mentorship. And if you listened to any of the Super Tech Doesn't Equal Super Supervisor, Vicky referenced that we wanted to do a talk on mentorship. And we asked Vicky if she would do it with us. In part because she has mentored both Dave and I. Me a little bit more, but a little bit to Dave as well. But Vicky's done a lot of mentoring to students coming into the lab, doing their internships when they first start working in the lab, and then young laboratorians working in the lab, which is what I was when Vicky was mentoring me, both as a student and as a young laboratorian. So I think first, why don't we start with what is mentorship? Anybody want to take that one?
I start. Actually had a few thoughts. Unless you want to start, Dave.
It's for me, this is actually like a tricky one for me to define. Because I think for me, especially early in my career, it was happening. I didn't even know it was happening.
There you go. Be good.
So I think it's tough to kind of put a definition on, but I don't know. Well, I'll yield the floor to Vicky.
Well, when you think about that, like initially you maybe didn't even know it was happening, and that's okay. A mentorship program, you would actually know it was happening. You would be aware of that. It would be by design. But to mentor someone or to be mentored by someone, it's that providing guidance and advice, through sh a sharing process with a person. And there would be a number of things that might, there should always be a goal, but there might be a number of things that would be the goal. And it could be to share how to l learn to perform certain tasks, like certainly a laboratory staff person who is receives a person in who they're going to be training. I mean, there's a certain amount of mentorship that goes on there because you're helping them learn how to do certain tasks. The other thing to think about is that mentor really should be helping that person develop not just technical ability, but how to develop personal characteristics that enable them to be better at whatever job they're in. So it doesn't have to be laboratory, but in any job that they're in. And a lot of that is learning how to communicate with people effectively. So the mentor would be like guiding, providing advice, giving feedback, providing support, not just actually, and I've got a list of things that are like negative things about mentorship or that, bad mentors do. But that whole idea of this interactive time with this person, if you really want to do a good job mentoring, there has to be some kind of interactive relationship with the person.
Well, and I think both parties need to actually want to be involved in the mentorship because someone can try to guide, like the old saying is you can guide a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. So it's kind of like that, where you can take somebody and try to mentor and guide them, but if they don't want it, then.
Ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, you can definitely, there's definitely certain personality types where that I've run into. If someone's perhaps maybe it's hard to know exactly where it comes from every time, but I believe that if someone's insecure in their ability, it's possible to perceive instruction and mentorship as like pointing out like a weakness, right? So that's where there's some level of vulnerability, right? On the the mentee, is that the term, right? So certain personality types, or maybe it could be the dynamic in the relationship, right? Where you have to be like comfortable and like open to learning.
One of the things that you had mentioned in just the outline that you had sent out, like what's the difference between leadership and mentorship? And that I feel like that's the thing that I thought the most about. And how would you describe the difference? And one of the things that in that process, one of the things that I was thinking about is that in leadership, most of the time that is directive. A person who is in a position of leadership, their job is to lead. So you are directing where you're going. Excuse me. And then I was thinking about the two of you, you're acting as instructors. So, you're teachers, you are educators. And so as a teacher, your job is instructive. You have a body of knowledge that these students need to be able to receive. A leader is directive, a teacher is instructive. And then I was thinking, well, way back when I was younger, many moons ago, they talked a lot about role models. And role models, I was thinking, what's the difference between a role model and a mentor? And a role model really truly was somebody we looked up to. And it's a passive relationship. So you can learn a lot from a role model. And it made me think of one of the supervisors that I had seen when I was right out of grad school that I wanted to work with. She was a role model for me, but I never was able to be in a and was never able to be her mentee because she didn't hang around long enough for me to learn from. But so again, the leader is directive, a teacher is instructive, a role model is passive, the mentor is interactive, which is what you were alluding to. There has to be the ability, this give and take, there has to be really good communication and trust. A high level of trust between the two.
That's a great distinction, because if you think about like a leader, like think about a supervisor in the lab, or like you said, an instructor, like us, we can be mentors,
Correct.
but we don't have to be. It's not inherent. I know many instructors who are terrible mentors. They're great instructors, but they're not a mentor. Same thing with supervisors.
Exactly.
They
Exactly.
get kind of mushed, like they're all impactful and growing people in different and maybe different ways, and so it's easy for them to kind of get like all mixed up a little bit, but they need to just.
It's not so much that it's a mashup as much as it is that there are certain tasks or certain things that you do that cross over. But one is not, it's not mutually exclusive. It's also not inherent to the position. Like Melissa was saying, just because you're a good tech doesn't make you a good supervisor. If you're a, you could be a good teacher, does not make you a good mentor.
Well, I was going to save our experiences for later, but I will say, like, Dave, for you and I, when you first started teaching with me your first year, I was like, oh no, Dave needs guidance. He needs instruction. He needs a mentor. So I'm going to basically mentor Dave this whole first year. And in part, like when I first started teaching, nobody mentored me. It was kind of like, good luck. And so knowing that, that's fine for me. Like I can, teaching is inherent to me. So I was fine with that. It was like the more like nuanced things within the university that I had to figure out that I needed help with. But like, I was like, oh no, like this is a completely different experience. I think it's important, and we should have mentorship. We should have that guidance. We should have that, and we don't. So I was like, all right, Dave, that's what I'm going to do. And basically I forced Dave into it. And
so you know that that was occurring, or did it just? Okay.
Yeah, I'm so I think the other thing about me too is like I don't know if I'm like self-complimenting, but I think it's a funny way to describe this, but like I'm a good mentee. And I mean that in the sense that like I am somewhat devoid of that like barrier of I'm okay to be vulnerable to people. And I feel safe enough generally. And part of that is my relationship with Melissa. And just, you know, sure. She started mentoring me when we started teaching. And of course, like I knew Melissa very well before that. So that's very helpful. But like, I want to get better at stuff. My main goal, whatever it is that I'm doing, is that I do better. I think about it better. I perform the tasks better. And so like why not? And one thing that you sort of have to do, I guess, is to know you kind of have to have some kind of an intuition as to sometimes things are taught to you and they can work for you. And sometimes it might not work for me. I can still take something from it. Yeah, I mean, I knew it was happening. Doors wide open. I think it's rare that for me to be in a position personally where I'm, especially when I'm in a new environment, for me not to just be listening, looking and processing everything. I don't want to turn down information. Yeah.
That's one of the things I was thinking about is if you want to be a mentor or you're intending to be a mentor, one of the first things you need to identify is the potential in an individual to be a mentee. You know, is that you get someone that's that, I got it all together. I know it all. I am, you know, God's gift to this profession, whatever the profession is. That kind of person is going to be way less open to learning. And if they ever became a mentee, it probably is going to be forced upon them. You know, if a lot of businesses have a mentorship program that a person coming in has to get into. Some educational institutions have mentorship programs that you have to go through. One of the healthcare professions that is very good at this is nursing. And many, many nursing programs, I don't mean the educational program, but the actual in practice, when they're actually in practice, excuse me, the nurse has to go through this mentoring program to be able to get to the next step. They're not going to get a raise in pay or get to a next level unless they go through this mentoring program. So we're kind of I guess the luxury for us is that our profession doesn't have formal mentorship. And so that most of the time, if we are going to select or get close to someone that we end up mentoring, we have the privilege of identifying those people who, as you said, David, you know, have their ears open, their mind is open, they're ready to absorb. They're not at that point where I got it now, you know, I'm together. So I think that is, you know, looking for a mentee, that is key.
Yeah.
Oh okay. Yeah, so that was my experience with Melissa, and so she's mentored me in several places too. Like I think education was the most impactful. That was definitely the thing that like I needed the most. But she did it when I was a tech too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and in other ways, But yeah, there needs to be kind of a mindset of growth first. And I've definitely seen other people where they have other priorities, I guess. And
Well, and then there's also the like that was a very formal, I'm going to mentor you in this kind of thing. So there's
it
the
was
very,
explicit too. That's
yes.
true, right? Yeah, because sometimes these relationships are much more informal, and by definition, it's a mentor-mentee. But yeah, Melissa was very like we had this conversation very early on. It's a good point.
So there's those two. There's the very formal ones where you know you're getting mentored, and then there's a very informal ones where you may be getting mentored about like certain things or certain aspects or certain events or a certain thing you're getting mentored on, and rather than it being the whole thing you're being mentored in, or like the whole first year, Dave, you were mentored and that, but like it doesn't always, it may be just individual things. Because for example, now I'm mentoring one of my coworkers, but in a very informal way. I have a very formal one that I'm mentoring, and a very informal one that I'm mentoring, where I might help her figure something out, but the rest of it she can kind of figure out on her own. But she comes to me when she has the questions. And so I'm informally mentoring her on those sorts of things, but the rest, she does it on her own. She's good. Or if I have feedback, she's happy to listen, kind of thing. But when I'm dealing with somebody like Dave or the other person that I'm formally mentoring right now, it's very, we're having meetings, we're going to discuss, we're going to talk about why. It's a very different relationship, and the informal could be that the mentee doesn't realize like they're getting mentored. Like Dave, you said in the beginning when we first started working in the lab, you don't really realize that you're getting mentored by these people, but you are.
And the other thing is, you were alluding to this, Melissa, that sometimes that when you are mentoring in that formal kind of mentorship, it's because it's part of the job. If you, well, let's say when you were working with Dave, as educators, you wanted to make sure that your job was done well. You wanted to help him do his job well. And so it's almost like it behooved you to do that mentoring so that the job is done better overall.
That's a great point, because we were both working synergistically on the same curriculum, really, very much overlapping. So I could mess up our stuff, I guess.
You could have, but I mean, you get to a
Sure.
point. No, he didn't. He was fine. But like, you get to the point where, like, I mean, Dave's fine now, right? He can spread his wings. He makes changes. He does whatever he wants, kind of thing. He has an idea of what he's doing. So it was just in that beginning phase where we were very working together in part for the job, like you're saying.
And the other part of the job, it might be that kind of setting in which I alluded to, in like in business, where you have to be mentored. You have to select a mentor, or in nursing, where usually the institution selects the mentor for the mentee. So when you have the opportunity to do what the two of you did and have this mutual selection that where there's a level of trust already, man, that's ideal. That really is ideal, I think. So was trying to think. Oh, and another thing about when you're in that kind of setting, like I'm sure most of what you did is a one-on-one, correct? There could also be like a group setting, where you might work with a small group, like two or three people. I know I had opportunity to do that some with supervisors. So I knew that there was some mentoring going on, and it wasn't always the one-on-one. Certainly, I think Perhaps you make a stronger impact when it's one-on-one, but you have a broader impact when you can, you know, do it with two or three people as well.
Yeah, the two coworkers that I'm formally and informally mentoring now, sometimes I pull them both in and I'm like, all right, let's do this together. And then I can get them both at the same time rather than doing it one-on-one.
Yeah,
exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Very good.
Well, I think the other thing with mentoring relationships is that sometimes you're passing on like the knowledge they need to know, like this is how you do this job, but then sometimes you're passing on the more tacit knowledge, whereas like this is like a nuanced thing about the job. Like one of the things I know Dave and I worked on, sorry Dave, I'm throwing you under the bus for this one. but one of the things that Dave and I worked on was working on like reading student faces or understanding when they're asking a question, but they're really asking you a different question. So like that's something that like you learn from experience of working with the students to understand what their faces are telling you and what their questions are really asking you. That's like, you could take it for like, and most instructors do like right at the beginning, whatever and a student's asking you, you assume that that's what they're asking you and you answer that question, but that's really not. And you can tell, like an instructor with experience can tell. And so one of the things that Dave and I worked on was that more tacit knowledge of, okay, this is nuanced, how do you figure this out kind of thing. That's just an example, but like that tacit knowledge is probably the more important thing that the mentor is going to share with you.
Yeah, it's like I took the job and it's like, all right, you know your stuff, your area of expertise. And I thought that was, this is a little bit of an aside, but I thought being an instructor, a teacher, for me, like the most important thing was like being smart and knowing this stuff. And that's awesome. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't trade that. But oh my gosh, is there way more to the actual role in applying all these things I know? And that was certainly an area that was a little trickier for me and that I still struggle with, is that the type of student I was and the way I performed as a student, I don't connect necessarily with the difficulties that my students are coming into. So I'd be confused about, I would know that there was an issue and it wasn't connecting. It took a lot of, and I probably still miss some of this, but it was tough for me to know where the wheel had fallen off the wagon, kind of. So that's, I think you can, this kind of ties back in when someone's getting into an industry, a profession, you have an idea of what that profession is, right? I had this romantic idea of what teaching would be. And then reality is different. It's still beautiful, but it's different than I expected. In a larger magnitude than I expected it to be different. So I think that's another role that of the mentor-mentee, is to take whatever view you had, preconceived view, and to just refocus it. Because that was a big adaptation I needed to make for sure.
Yeah, the having a, and then this is a good thing. It's like if you have no knowledge of what the person's training is, you're limited in how you can help them. If you have training, like and again, I'll use ours. There's a certain body of knowledge that we have in the med lab field. If we have that and that is solid, then you can move on to the other stuff. And the thing that we have to do well is what Melissa's saying, is that communication. You know, we need to be able to hear what a person is saying. we also need to be able to see between the lines, you know, between those words, to see what are they intending to say. And then how do we address that in a way that will be helpful to the person? And certainly there's a term that is used called reflective listening, or it's sometimes called active listening. So you take what the person has said, and then you would reflect that back to them in a little different way, but not changing it too much, but enough so that it is able to be heard in a different way. And if they say, yeah, that's what I meant, then you know you've connected. If it's like, yeah, well, kind of, then you know you have a little bit more listening that you need to do. Certainly someone that is in, going back to the leadership thing, you know, someone that is in leadership, they are just going to keep honing in on what they want to say so that they get the outcome that they want to get. Where the person who is mentoring is trying to help the person capture what it is that they want to be doing or what they're wanting to be saying. And that's where that interactive part goes. But if you don't communicate, if you're not on the same page, you don't even have to agree with everything the same, you know, but you have to understand where that person's coming from.
I think that's a great point too, that like, just because you're in a mentor mentee doesn't mean that everything is all kind of one way too.
Yeah.
So it might be a little early to bring it up.
Not going to be one way. I mean, if truly mentoring someone, it cannot be one way, because then it goes back more to directing, or, you know, being directive, leadership. You want to help the person become the best at who they can be, not a mini me. I mean, I was working with Melissa. It was like, I would see things about her that it's like, yeah, man, I could never do that. And I love that about her, because she was different. And yet she was open to, you know, she could take the things that were the best about me and then take those, but she was so different, and she was able to be, she wasn't a mini me. She was a better than me. Yeah. And I really appreciate that. Whenever you find someone that can take that in, process it, and become, you know, who they should be, not who you think they should be.
I think most people really, I think that's difficult for in today's society. So I think one of the most what's that?
Why is that?
So I think one of the most damaging things to the fabric of our society, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I'll make it relevant. I promise. I'm going to try.
I know.
Social media and people comparing themselves to other people. It's extremely damaging. So I've been on something of a journey, like in fitness, and it is really common when you look at people on social media and they have these gorgeous bodies. I mean, they're like in immaculate shape, right? And you say, I want to be, you know, like that person. And so part of this journey, though, is like, you're only ever going to be the best version of you if you do everything right, right? You're never going to be that other person. I could love basketball. I don't, right? I could love basketball and aspire to become a professional basketball player. But I do firmly believe, and this is something of a discussion, but some people have the toolkit to become great at basketball. And some people just may not.
Right.
And so it's about being the best version of yourself. It should always be about being the best version of yourself. And that's different. I think it's more and more difficult for our younger people to see that.
Right. And to accept limitations.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a grandson who wants to play basketball for the Celtics.
Yeah.
unless he, I mean, he's going to be tall, but he's also very skinny. So I think unless he got meat on his bones, there's no way he'd be able to, get on the court with those guys. They'd be pushing him around, knocking him over all the time. So again, like that, you may not have the full toolkit, but what could you do? You know, he may become an excellent coach because he understands the game. So yeah, just picked up on your bat.
And he may have a lifelong love and passion of basketball, and he plays regularly, and it can still be an integral part of you, but perhaps you're not a professional at it or something like that. I think, one of my biggest, I found a thing in the world that I'm like good at, and I just leaned into it. And there are other things that I love, but I'm just not quite, it's just not quite my thing.
Okay. So if we bring it back around to mentoring, I believe that the mentor role is to help the mentee begin to see the things that are their positive qualities, their skills, their abilities, and then also to help that mentee see where they can get better at all those levels, and then enable them to get this plan of how to do that. And again, it's not, hey, listen, you can't play basketball because you're not tall enough. You don't have a 3-point shot that's really good. So just forget it, but you would identify the things that the person is good at. So you provide that affirmation, that confirmation of the good things about them, and then find ways in which you can help them become the better them, as you were saying, be the best version of them that they can be.
Might be a little early in the conversation for me to take this here, but it's kind of fresh of mind, and I thought it would be fun to explore. And this is be more for Melissa and Vicky, I think, than me, certainly. But we talk a lot so far about growing the mentee. But how does the mentor-mentee relationship grow the mentor? Right. So I believe that mentors benefit from mentoring in maybe ways that are like tough to know that would happen. But if anyone could take that and run with it a little bit.
Well, I think one of the first things to think about is to teach, you really have to learn twice, right? So when I'm mentoring, I'm showing you what I know, but I'm really relearning and redoing whatever I've shown you. So when you're mentoring somebody, you're kind of reinforcing what you know. You're looking back and you might be like, oh, that wasn't a very good technique. And then you learn other ways. So you do a lot of learning on your own when you are mentoring somebody as well. Like one of the big things is that. Vicky, do you want to add to that?
Totally agree. And when we spoke the last time, one of the things that, well, actually several points, I said, okay, and I learned this, and then because I did this, and there were not grave errors, but certainly mistakes that I made, and I can learn from that. Now, if I were to keep that to myself and like, oh my gosh, I don't want to tell them that, because then they would think less of me, then I'm not a good mentor. So as you said, Melissa, you share what you know as the, like, this is the way to do it. And then you can share, you're like, you know, and I didn't do it well in this case. And this is what happened. And this is how I corrected it. And then I had this other time when I did it this way. And this is, you know, this worked. So it, again, it's, I think that concept of sharing, you know, it's like whatever I have as in my head and as part of my experience, I want to share it with you so that you learn kind of what not to do because I did it and it didn't work. And also to come up with ideas of how to do something because it, you know, it's, that's a better way of doing it. So you end up getting to that better you, not just the better mentee, but a better you.
I think another thing, and this is kind of, if the mentee makes mistakes, you can kind of affirm, oh yeah, I did that. Been there, done that. Because like, I remember one of the things, Dave, his first year teaching, he came to me and was like, I'm not prepared for Porphyria lecture. And he did it. And he's like, I don't remember what I said. I don't remember what happened. I didn't know if I did a good job. I don't know anything. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, the very first time I lectured for megaloblastic anemias, I don't remember anything. I blanked out completely. Don't remember a thing. Like, I did it, but I can't tell you what I did, if I did a good job. I'm like, yeah, I totally get it. That, you know, it happens. You did it your once, you'll never do it again.
Yeah, this is like instructor confessional. This is a teacher confessional here. Yeah. I literally performed a lecture and I'm like, I got like 10 minutes into it. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
I know that. And I didn't review. And right in front of the class, it was just like the soul just left my body as I looked at the PowerPoint and I was like, wait a minute, what? Oh no, you just realize you're not sharp.
Everybody.
Oh goodness.
So I think that's another thing that we can do is just, oh yeah, we've all done that. Don't worry.
Yeah, I felt awful, right? I felt awful because like it was obviously a bad experience for them too. Did they point it out to me as students? No, lovely people. They just let me just be dumb in front of them.
They may not have realized it.
Maybe not, but there's some bright kids. I'm telling you, there's some bright bulbs out there. They noticed. I felt like this big. And then I told Melissa and she's like, ah, yeah, been there, you know? And yeah, I touched the hot stove. So here's the interesting thing too, is Melissa told me not to touch the hot stove. Melissa has been very good in coaching me, mentoring me to prepare before lectures. And a bit of hubris creeped in and bang, you know, I got slapped for it. And so unfortunately, I didn't learn from Melissa's mistake.
But you learned, and then I confirmed, yeah, all right, that's happened to all of us, don't worry about it.
And I was able to kind of recover emotionally a little faster, perhaps.
And I think that that's part of being a mentor as well, is when the person does, they either make a mistake, they make an error, or they don't do things as well as they wish they had. Mm. You don't get on their back. You don't get on their case. I think that sometimes a leader might do that, or a teacher might do that. You know the answer to that kind of idea. A mentor takes it as, I understand. And what can we do better in the future? You know, or you're able to find some, you know, that blue shirt you wore that day when you were teaching, that was good. You know, it might be something as small as that, but you find some way to provide that cushion for the person, but don't leave them there. I mean, sometimes if you're with a colleague, you might just, you know, help them diffuse, listen to them, that sort of thing. But if you're in a mentor-mentee relationship, you want to be able to take them to that next step. You know, get them back up on their feet. You know, okay, so what do you think you'll do next time, Dave? You know, or how do you think you're going to handle this talk next time? I can flash back to, I'll share one of my funny teaching, learning kind of experiences. The very first major talk I ever did was in about myelodysplasia. And what was my topic was myeloproliferative disorders. And so I did this talk, and it was at this big university, and there were all these pathologists and physicians, you know, like hematologists, blah, 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 all these people. And I had this really good talk. And oh, I know, my specific talk was polycythemia vera. That was it. That was it. And so I felt like I was going to nail this. And I had these slides that showed them all the points I was making. And the overwhelming evaluation at the end was that, well, gosh, I didn't even need to come. I could have just read the slides. And so I realized that it's great to, you know, like I learned how to teach better. You have to have the give them information, but allow them to be engaged enough that they're still listening. What's the next thing they're going to say? You know, don't give every little jot and tittle there. Otherwise, they're reading the slides or whatever you're projecting, however you're doing that. They're going to be reading that. They're not going to be paying attention to what you're saying. So anyway, so that's about education. But for me, I never had anybody sit down with me to tell me, okay, well, what do you think you'd do different the next time? Thankfully, I did that to myself, but I didn't have a mentor. And I think I would have recovered more quickly had I had someone like a Dave come up to me and say, hey, let's talk about this, you know, and have a dialogue to be able to process that. I had to dig myself out of a hole, you know, by myself. It's like we need to be transparent. We need to be, and Dave, you've used the term vulnerable. You have to be that kind of a person, but you have to not let the person stay there. You know, it's not just, well, we've all done it, you know, so you'll get over it kind of thing. But okay, I've done it, you've done it. Now, what can we do better in the future? That's the value of a mentor, I think.
Yeah, you got to give them the medicine that they need, right? And if they're being hard on themselves already, you know.
I think another thing, and I don't know if this is one that people generally think about, but like mentoring somebody, what are the longer term benefits? Because we think about the shorter term benefits of interacting with the person, learning more, sharing experiences, like those kinds of things. But long term mentoring, we all have a coworker who I mentored for some time when she first graduated with you, Dave. And when she first was working, she was very nervous. She definitely knew her stuff, but you had to you know this, bring it out of her kind of thing and have her really. So I sat down, did a couple of train the trainer sessions with her, and I had her really figure out how to train at the bench. And she became one of the best trainers that we had at the hospital. And then of course she left and she works in industry now and she's fantastic at her job. But longer term, she was talking with a client and when she was installing an instrument, and they were like, do you know anybody who's really good at hematology who could teach? And she's like, yeah, here you go. Here's Melissa, my former professor kind of thing. And so I started working at a different university part-time because she suggested me. So creating those close relationships allows the mentee to know you really well too. And then they, you would offer them up if opportunity came around. They do the same for you. They bring up your name. They bring up you for, oh yeah, Melissa would be perfect for that kind of thing. So I think there's also those longer term benefits of having that really good relationship with the mentee.
You know, when I was thinking about us talking, I just did a little search on trying to just get my brain thinking about some other stuff. And there's this guy, James Griffith Cole. Are you familiar with him? Well, he had, he likes to use that, what is it? not alliteration, but it used like the three A's of mentorship, the seven C's of mentoring, you know, that kind of thing. And one of the things that he mentioned is that in a good mentoring situation, there is going to be one of the C's is it's a conduit to others, which is exactly what you're saying. You know, you got that interaction between the two, and it increases the mentee's visibility to other people. It increases the mentor's visibility to other people through the mentee. So that's a perfect example of what Mr. Cole had been talking about. It's great.
Yeah, I think for the quick elevator pitch for folks to be a mentor is that you will benefit from it in maybe unexpected ways. But I think there might be some folks out there that they'll hold on to their knowledge and be greedy and protectionist with it in hopes that they keep themselves kind of at the top of the pile. Exactly. It doesn't work that way. So I'm going to tell you, it just doesn't work that way. And it is, again, I lean into the humans do best when they cooperate. And, you know, the ways that you will grow being a mentor, like Melissa touched on, is practicing mastery at a higher level is usually what ends up happening when you have to mentor. And then building relationships that then transcend the institutions that you're in oftentimes. Yeah. I mean, Melissa was my mentor for a long time, and now we're very close friends. We'll always be friends, right? So quick elevator pitch to the folks out there, mentor somebody, right? And it's tough because you need the two-way street. I think that is a tricky piece to this whole equation, is having another person that is, you know, open to it. And it's a wonderful thing.
I think one of the questions that you were hoping to address was, what do you do, or how do you find a mentor? Maybe that's a good segue to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So how does one do that, Vicky?
You can ask me.
Well, I guess, like, for me, I found Vicky, right? So I didn't find her. I mean, I got placed at the hospital where she was working, and she was my clinical preceptor. So
I just want to sit for the record, I heard that differently. I heard mentee, not mentor. So how does one find a mentor? Sorry.
No. So I was the mentee, and yep. I found Vicky. But I was there with, you know, when as a student with a few other girls, and I don't think they latched onto you like I did. Sorry, Vicky, I just latched onto you. I stuck my fangs in, and that was it.
Little sucker bites there.
But I think too, like, in part, when you're as a mentee looking for a mentor, Vicky was knowledgeable. She knew her stuff. She wasn't arrogant about it or like rude about it, which you can still find mentors like that, but it's just easier to work with mentors who are not.
Great.
And she was willing to share. She wanted to share her knowledge. And so I wanted to learn everything. So I latched my little fangs in and didn't let go. Even when she left my institution, I went to a different institution, I would still be like, hey, Vicky, I have questions. Hey. Right. And I would do that when she was at my institution. Like, that was a lot easier because I could just walk down the hall and be like, hey, I have a question, kind of thing. Or lean over to the other microscope and say, hey, I have a question. But it could be simple, like things as, like, I had a question about a specimen. Vicky was there to answer me. Somebody else would be there and answer me. But I knew when I asked Vicky, I wasn't going to get the right answer. I would get the right answer, but I would get why it's the right answer. So there's that difference too of, oh, this is the answer. Okay, but why? And then I'd have a deeper understanding of why. So it was kind of that relationship too, where I could get more than just, here's the answer. I could get why. Or I would get the, well, what do you think is the answer? Right. Why is that the answer? And then make me, like, try to think through it. So I I you find somebody who's like that and then latch on to them.
Yeah, I was rethinking about this as I processed what the actual prompt was. Yeah, and as a chronic mentee, I think ask lots of questions and listen to those that are answering the questions. And the way that they answer the questions, as Melissa was just going through, is totally going to give you the road, the path to the mentor. Yeah, so just ask questions and listen. Yeah, you'll find someone.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that another thing that helps when you're looking for a mentor is admiration for the person. When you know, there are things about this person that you appreciate, and sometimes it's the intangibles. That can be so valuable. I know that there are individuals who are super, super smart and knowledgeable. I don't want to say smart, but like intelligent, and they've got this grasp of knowledge. But then you ask them a question, it's like, you're asking me this? You don't know this already? Didn't you learn this in MedTech 202? You know, and you get that kind of a feel back from the person. It's kind of, okay, I could probably learn from them. However, it's going to be painful. And it's not positive. It's not enjoyable. You know, can you learn from them? Yeah, probably can, but certainly not the kind of fun way that you can learn from them. I jotted down what this guy said. I don't want to plagiarize his thinking. But this, again, back to this Jim Cole, the three A's of mentorship is available, and we've talked about that already. Analytical, you know, you got to be able to think through what, you know, where is this person already at? What is, you know, what are they doing well? What can I give them as positive feedback? And then where might we go in the future? And then the other A that he said was active listener. And dang, I mean, so many people, and I'm not just talking in the laboratory field, I'm talking always, people just don't want to listen. They want to tell you what they want to tell you rather than hearing what you have to say and thinking about it. We've all been in those situations. We've all had people who were at our level, people who are above us, people who are below us, who are like that. But the people that we can learn from are the people who are the active listeners. I think that's pretty key. So I agree with that guy.
Well, and I think you can look, you know, to your coworkers. So you can look at like your seniors, your senior or your lead techs, your supervisor, you can look to them for mentors. But like Dave said, if you ask questions and see how they answer you, you can kind of see if any of them would be a good mentor. You can also look to coworkers, because sometimes like Dave and I are coworkers. I'm not his supervisor. I've never been his supervisor. He's always been my coworker. Vicky was my senior tech. So Vicky was my superior, but like she was open to mentoring. She had that mentoring mindset. Whereas like sometimes supervisors don't, like the supervisor that we had, she wasn't, I always call her sort of a mentor, but she didn't really mentor. She just kind of let me go with the opportunities that I wanted to go with. She gave me that opportunity rather than really mentoring me. If I said, hey, I want to do this, she said, okay, go for it, kind of thing. That's not really mentoring. It's in the leadership. It's inherent in the leadership of, is this okay for me to do, sort of thing. So I think looking around there, but if you can't find one there, look elsewhere, right? You could look back, if you're close enough to your school, you could look back at the school that you came from and see if you have a mentor there. You could look externally. You could look at like professional organizations. So I know ASCLS has a mentorship program where you can apply to find a mentor. That's supposed to be more for like mentoring and learning how to be in the organization in a professional.
Sure.
But like if you're learning how to function in your professional organizations, that's essentially you learning how to function in your profession.
Right.
So if you really can't find a local mentor, there are those options as well.
Right. But it is inherent upon the person who wants to be mentored to get out there. I mean, you can't just sit there and wait for it to happen. You have to be available. And I think one of the things that, and I'll throw Melissa under the bus at this point, but one of the things that I noticed about Melissa is that, you know, if something came up that she could get involved in or do, she was there. She was going to do it. She didn't care how well it was going to go. She was going to be involved. And I think that if someone wants to learn or grow or get better at being in relationship to people or being a good leader, becoming a better mentor, they have to be open and out there. The person that holds back, they're going to hold back usually on their information. They're going to hold back on their insights as well. You want somebody that's just kind of out there. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Appreciated about Melissa.
Well, and I think another thing with that, Vicky, what you said earlier is that I like to like look at people and pick and choose what I want to model from them. Mm-hmm. So like I'll look at Vicky and like Vicky is fantastic with knowledge and with people. So she's not just smart, but she knows how to work with people. So I could look at Vicky and be like, all right, I don't know. I know one of our coworkers was kind of hard to work with, hard to deal with. And when I was a little hot-headed 22-year-old, I had some trouble working with that. So Vicky would be like, all right, how should you talk to this person? How should you work with that person? So I knew I could go to Vicky for that. And so I would always go to Vicky for that. And sometimes she would come to me and be like, what do you think? And I'd be like, yeah.
And it's interesting. Another term that this guy that I had read about, he talked about a good mentor is also going to be a diplomat.
Mm.
You know, not necessarily always the problem solver, but the person who can help diffuse or calm down. Provide a, hey, let's look at it this way.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's easy to just. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
No. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's easy to be like, yeah, that other person is 100% wrong, right? And you're great. And sometimes it's 60-40 or, you know, 70-30. And that's important too, you know, like, yeah.
Well, and sometimes it's that person's just dead wrong, but
yeah,
I could have handled it better, right? I could have approached them differently. I could have gone into the situation in a different light. And, you know, dealing with a 22, 23-year-old with that hot temper was a little bit, you know, it was needed a little bit more mentoring to calm it down.
And you started applying some of that and it starts to work, right? Yep. And that's where you're like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then you get positive feedback because, you know, that worked in that situation. Yeah. Oh, okay. So maybe it'd be better to start that way, you know, and
Mm-hmm. So, but I think you can look at mentors. You can have different mentors for different things.
Yeah.
Like 100%. For example, I would go to one of our other colleagues with anything that was related to special co-ed because that was his specialty. Vicky had the knowledge too, but I would always go to him because that was what he was known for. Like if you just look at him, you're like, yep, special co-ed dude. So I would always go to him and be like, all right, questions, let's talk about it. Like, cause, and also he would just spew information at you, which I liked. So I could just sit there and listen. So I think you have different mentors for different things.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say too, just to jump in here, that person, passion, they had overwhelming passion for that particular subject matter. So I think that's another thing that people can kind of look for. If you see someone as passionate about a given thing, be probative with them. They could perhaps be a mentor for that particular subject matter, because the love for that is, it bleeds through and permeates to other people around, I find.
So just find mentors for what you're looking for.
This is a fun discussion.
But so if you're in a little bit more formal setting, that would be definitely something that the mentor would want to have as part of that initial discussion. What direction are we wanting to? So if you are choosing to mentor someone, or maybe somebody comes to you and says that, could I be your mentee? And you would want to identify with that person, what's the intention? Is it to learn more about this particular scientific background or this body of knowledge, that sort of thing? Is it to learn better how to work with people? Is it better to learn certain techniques or whatever? So again, identifying that, and then what do? You make a plan for how you're going to get to there. So it's not a whole lot different than if you're trying to manage a project. You got to have a plan. You got to know who's going to do what, and how are you going to know when you reach that point. And then you have to evaluate it, and then loop back around and do the same thing over again. So if you're in that more formal setting of mentoring, that should be part of the process right there.
Absolutely. I mean, when you were mentoring me, I don't think anything was formal. I think it was informal, but you inherently knew what I needed to work on. And so you would kind of come to me, or I would come to you with those things, and you would be like, all right, let's work on that. Or ask me guiding questions or something similar. So I think too, like having an informal mentoring relationship, you can still pinpoint those things that the mentee needs to work on and informally work on it with them.
Right. Right. I guess this would be just from my own experience, that an informal mentoring situation works really well with someone that you're around on a frequent basis, or like it's not somebody that you see once a month. If you're in a situation where you're only going to be seeing somebody every 2 weeks or once a month, you really truly need to have something a little bit more formal. Mm. Otherwise it'd just be kind of floundering out there, and are we really making any progress? Am I learning anything? Are you learning anything? And it would be difficult to track that.
Mm. I think that's a really, really good point. Right now where I work, my two coworkers that I mentioned earlier, they both work on site at a hospital and they teach part-time, but teaching is part of their job. I know it's weird, but they are on site together and I'm never on site with them. So really, even my informal mentoring, she has to like actively reach out, or I have to actively reach out to her, and it has to be constant communication. So even though I don't see her, I'm communicating with her either via email, or we use Google Chat a lot for where I work. So I'm chatting with her all the time, even though it's informal. And then my more formal one, we make a lot more meetings, and we meet a lot more on either Google, whatever Google Zoom is, or Zoom, Google Video, Google, whatever it is. I don't know what it's called. That thing.
But I'm sure Google is thrilled with you calling it Google Zoom.
What is it called, Dave? Google Hangout? Yeah,
I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, that Google Video thing, basically.
I'm willing to bet a hefty sum of money it's not Google Zoom. But
it's not Google Zoom, but we're on Zoom right now.
So thank you, Zoom. Right?
All right. I know. But anyway, the point is I have to actively and actually have meetings with him on a more consistent basis than I do my informal one. But my informal one, I still have to have a lot of active communication with.
Yeah. So in that communication, it's like there's some negotiating. You know, if you know, if things are going great, you have to negotiate, like, how far are we going to take this? What are we going to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
And like getting that plan in action, but it can't be your plan. It has to be the negotiated plan or mm-hmm. that you're going to have. And the other thing is, honestly, if you're in a more formal situation, there really should be some kind of preparation. You know, you don't just plop into it and, hey, well, what do you want to talk about today, kind of thing. It's, you know, we said that, you know, we're going to work on putting together this topic that you were going to discuss or talk about or teach, something like that. And how's it going? Tell me what you've done, that sort of thing, so that you can have, you know, your the person knows that they're preparing something, they're doing something. You know that they've done that. You're going to be evaluating that together, seeing how it could get better, you know, that sort of thing. And it's that, you know, the bottom line is you want to get to the point where you're enabling growth. Yep. In the person.
Yeah. And I've also looked at it and said, okay, as I guess a formal, more formal mentor, I've looked at a mentee and said, you need more training.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily mean in the lab. I could be thinking about like other things. Maybe you need to go and take this class on how to use the learning management system because you don't know how to use a learning management system. And I could show you. But when there's this class that's pre-made, why? Like those sorts of things where like, if I look at a mentee and say, you should really do this kind of thing. I think that's another thing a mentor can do is get more formal training, guide a mentee to get a different certificate or to get something else, some other training, external training that they need as well, that outside of what I can offer the mentee.
An example.
You could offer, but not best offered. That's the, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and again, managing your time. What's the best use of your time? If, like Melissa said, if somebody's already put together a program that could communicate that, you know, route them that way. Mm-hmm. And have them come back and then you discuss yes. it. I'm thinking, especially with the two of you being educators, you know, maybe you're going to be mentoring someone who is also an educator or a new educator. They come in and, you know, they really just aren't great at doing their presentations about polycythemia vera, whatever. and so what you might identify in them is that they really, honestly, you know, you've got great knowledge. What you need to do is take an education class, you know, learn how to put together a lecture, learn how to use tools to enhance your lecture. You know, how do you get the right slides that you are able to project? And how do you talk through what people should observe on the slides? You know, you might be able to see it, but how do you help them learn that themselves? So again, I fully support people getting whatever kind of additional or continuing education that they need to hone those skills that enhance the things that they already have that they're really good at.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I guess why don't we wrap up with this? Why don't you want to guys talk or just mention any mentors who have been really influential or any things that have been really influential in your professions?
Yeah, I don't want to like call out individuals, but definitely that like it has been transformative. I mean, like I think for people need to like frame these relationships as and also keep in mind that this should be like a productive thing, right? So like if you're having a relationship and it feels deleterious and like you like shun that, right? But these a mentor mentee thing, no matter which side you're on, is a growth opportunity, should be viewed as such, and they should be nurtured, because I know I am a much better Dave than had I not had these relationships and these mentorships. In the spirit of like growth, like lean into these things. I mean, I think that's where my parting words, I guess, on the subject.
I'll go next, Vicky. We'll let you be like the last closing thing.
The
So
final word.
I've had several mentors, and when I first graduated, I usually say I had three, but I really had two, and then my supervisor. I had Vicky, who was a huge mentor for me. In life, in my job, and basically everything. And then I had that mentor that I mentioned that was about like content for special coagulation. Those were my two huge first mentors. But you have different mentors for different seasons and different things. I mean, Vicky's always been there as a mentor in general in life for me. So you may have one mentor who's there forever. And you know, like you said, that you latch your little fangs in and you never pull them out. And then you'll have other mentors, right? So now I have a mentor who kind of helps guide me along professionally within professional organizations, and what do I want to do? Because then he'll throw my name in to different places if I'm interested. Or I call him a lot and I say, hey, I want to talk about teaching pedagogy because I don't have a whole lot of people I can talk to pedagogy about. And I know he's fabulous and fantastic and has a lot of experience. So like I have different mentors for different parts of my life that I want to focus on. And then you can also have personal mentors because maybe you want to, I don't know, learn the French horn or learn something. You're going to have a mentor there to help guide you with whatever goal it is that you're working towards. And I think having that mentor for whatever you need in your life is beyond beneficial because you're going to learn so much and you have that person to lean on. And I can't say enough about getting a good mentor.
I agree. One of the things that we haven't talked about is what if in that selection of a mentor, you get someone and there are things that kind of make you feel like, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. And I mean, some of the things that are pretty easy to identify, you know, like a somebody that's, you know, super blustery and can't control themselves. Sure, that's easy to identify. Or somebody who has that abuse of power or just even sexual harassment, you know, that stuff, that's pretty easy to identify and get away from that. But also, there could become some kind of conflict between the mentor and the mentee's supervisor. That can be pretty tricky and probably would be an indication that perhaps you should pull out of that kind of situation as well. And another one is if you have someone who can identify the things that you're doing wrong, but doesn't help you come up with constructive progress or constructive solutions, that is not going to be helpful to you. So you know, like it, I guess you could flip it both ways. If you're the mentor, you know, yeah, you give constructive criticism, and that means you identify and you're willing to bring up the things that the person should needs to grow in or ways in which they need to change, but you're going to do it in a way that is not demeaning, doesn't put them down, it isn't able to they're able to see it as yeah, they have my best interests in mind. You get somebody that is telling you things and you don't have that sense, then that is not someone that would be a good mentor and you should get out. So if you're in that situation, or if you're at the point where the goal that you had with that mentor, if you've reached that goal, then perhaps it's time to end that mentoring relationship. Now, I'm not talking about the kind that where you develop friendships and you get better because you know each other, that kind of thing. But if you're in a situation, let's say someone that is in another part of the country, and maybe they're mentoring you about how to lead in our profession, you know, at the administrative level, you know, in ASCLS nationwide or even internationally. But you reach that point where you kind of accomplished what you were supposed to do. How do you kind of pull? Do you just stop? And I don't think that that's the best thing to do. I think it's good to have a time to reflect on the experience that you had. Oh, I'm getting a call. Me. There. Are you there?
We're here. Yep.
Good. Sorry. I think it's important for us to, in that situation, reflect on the experience, you know, communicate honestly, you know, like my life is kind of going a different direction, that sort of thing. So you can head towards some kind of closure, and you can talk about and celebrate the successes. You know, man, I've learned this from you and this is great. And then ending with that appreciation and thanks to that person. And certainly if you have someone that is, you know, hasn't become actually a friend that you know you're going to keep in touch with all the time, if and you've had a little bit more of a formal relationship, I think that it's important to bring that to that closure so that, you know, you're both on the same page again. Certainly if it is that a more formal setting, that would be essential. I know that they do that in certain businesses. There's certain things that, you know, you got to go through this, got to go through that, and then you bring it to a close. Nursing does that as well when they do mentorship. Well, when you ask about a person who mentored you, I had probably a funny kind of experience. And the very first person I had any sense who of the fact that they were mentoring me was my phys ed teacher when I was in ninth grade. And she came in and she started, you know, she was like the first thing we thought, man, she's weird. She was really odd, really, really weird. But in talking with her, she knew so much about how people related to each other, and she would say things that kind of made me and a couple other people just stop and think, yeah, she's right. She's weird, but she's right. And she had a couple times where she just pulled us all together in her little office, and she talked about us or talked to us about personalities and how you work with different personalities. And that was the very first time I ever had any kind of mentoring that was not just teaching. And I appreciated the fact that she didn't have to do that. It was just, she cared about us becoming better in how we were just as people. And I take that with me. You know, it's that I always want to, if there's something that I know, I want somebody to be, if they want to learn it, I want to share that with them. If somebody asks me, so how is it that you can still be kind to such and such a person who's been such a jerk to you? If they ask me that, I want to be able to share that with them. So again, I guess it's that you alluded to that kind of mindset of being open and open to learning and open to sharing as well.
So. I think that's an excellent summary for mentoring. Yeah. Open to learning, open to sharing.
Okay, good. Good. Good to Thanks, see you Vicky. Guys.
It's yeah, always wonderful you. To see you too. Thank you. Great.
Thank you Great. So much for coming on and sharing your experience and your knowledge with everyone.
My pleasure, for sure.
And everybody else, thanks for watching.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Bye.